And the idea that he is anti-establishment is like saying that I'm from the establishment and you're not.
But you are now. You see, the truth is you're part of the metropolitan liberal elite.
With my liberal tears, crying my liberal tears.
Absolutely, and I'm not. And I'm very pleased not to be part of the liberal elite, which I think is most disagreeable.
No one could argue that I was from the establishment and you are, that you were.
You're the new establishment. You see, my type of old-fashioned fuddy-duddy establishment has long since passed into history, whereas you are the new establishment.
Weirdly, when I was in Washington, D.C., I saw more Pret a Manger's than McDonald's.
Yeah, loads of... Really?
Unthinkable.
I mean, they are... I'm assuming that you're in a particularly nice part of the...
I was in the centre of town for most of it, so...
Yeah. I think if you crossed the tracks, and I think that kind of old stereotype of saying the other side of the tracks is actually from D.C., if you cross the tracks, then there may have been fewer Pret a Manger's.
I'd have thought so, yes. Mm. You know, not so many...
I mean, I do love a halloumi wrap, but they're extortionately expensive. £4.50 here, anyway. Hello, dear listener. My name's Jazza, and you're listening to the Right Dishonourable podcast, you poor, poor thing.
Whoa. Don't devalue the brand. Jeez.
Devalue the brand. Oh, dear. Oh,
trying to speak the language. You're in social media consultancy, so...
Who are you? Introduce yourself.
I'm Jimmy.
I'm
the other half of The Right Dishonourable.
The better half.
Some might say.
Every week we talk about current events, social issues, and politics in podcast form, so you can listen to it in your ears. Mm.
This is episode 69, but we actually...
We
haven't come up with anything vaguely sexual to talk about.
Sexuality?
Well, yeah, I suppose. Yeah, there is that.
We
obviously did not think of that before we hit record.
Not at all. This is just us on the fly. What are we going to be talking about this week, Jimmy? Tell the lovely people.
So I think we're actually ending with the sexuality topic.
We are, So let's work our way backwards, because that makes perfect sense.
So
we know what we're doing.
We found a cheat sheet of LGBT plus terminology.
Q plus.
There's too many letters these days. No one can remember.
Why there's a cheat sheet, but anyway. Yeah.
And it delineated between acceptable phrases or words to describe LGBTQ plus people and unacceptable ones. And
this was being circulated around the police who were going to be helping out with University of East Anglia's Pride. This month is Pride Month. In the UK. But it's Black History Month in the US. And I got quite a lot of pushback when I wished everybody a happy LGBT month in the UK. And people were like, oh, it's actually Black History Month. What a great opportunity for us to intersect. Anyway.
So we are going to be talking about that somehow. Myself and Jazza do not entirely see eye to eye on the terminology issue.
I just think it would be nice if you weren't a twat to people.
People do think that. Yeah. So you're by no means alone. And working backwards, as the second topic, we're going to be discussing the fact that Twitter, despite being a lot of fun, is losing tons and tons of money. I think it's, 170 million, was it pounds or dollars?
They're
much for much these days, aren't they?
Yeah, it's losing $167 million.
There you go.
The latest quarter of 2016.
So Twitter has, I think, lost money consistently since it started up, even though Donald Trump is now using it as, you know, a means of government.
So I've said this, because Donald Trump tweets all the time, that's going to do wonders for Twitter's valuation. Mm. I was joking, and it seems like quite a lot of financial journalists were taking that kind of viewpoint seriously.
Well, you know, as a financial journalist, I couldn't possibly comment.
How many stories have you written based on this assumption?
That I couldn't comment?
Yeah! And the first topic that we're doing is Brexit. That's happening still. The Lords might fuck it up for Theresa May, and then she'll abolish them. Do you want to explain the story better than I?
The so-called Brexit bill has made it through the House of Commons. It passed its third reading, and Diane Abbott, the shadow Home Secretary, managed to turn up for the third vote, despite...
How did she vote?
She voted in line with the government, so she voted to...
To trigger...
To pass the bill, yeah.
So the first wave of voting, she now famously had a migraine, despite the fact that she went out drinking the night before.
I think it was the second reading, because the first reading was largely ceremonial.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the House of Commons is old, and it does stuff in an old way. speaking of old ways in the House of Commons, the Lords, as Jazza said, or I think you said, are potentially... are being threatened by the government, shall we say, with abolition if they don't allow the Brexit bill to pass through unamended. There were dozens of amendments tabled in the Commons, and they were all defeated because the government wants the bill to be essentially just a way of authorising its ability to trigger Article 50.
I kind of love this, because quite a lot of the members of the House of Lords, I'm thinking specifically of the Liberal Democrats, want it abolished anyway. So just misbehave, guys. Have fun.
Yeah. It is. It might actually be a way for the Lib Dems to kill two birds with one stone. They can put up opposition to the Brexit bill because Tim Fran, the Lib Dem leader, doesn't think that there's enough democratic parliamentary involvement in the Brexit process, and they can
show how unconstitutional an appointed second chamber is.
So before Tony Blair got into office, the House of Lords did used to be what I'm going to refer to as proper lords, as in proper ancient peers.
I own this here land.
Yes, and my grandfather and his grandfather and his grandfather have owned the land forever.
But they've all been lords.
Yes, and then Tony Blair restructured it in a really obtuse way so that most of the Lords are now political appointees, and a hundred or so are now still like peers of the realm, as they're called.
They're called hereditary peers.
So, which is a totally weird way of doing it. I have no idea why he decided to do that, because at the time he had a thumping majority of like 400 plus MPs. In the Commons, that is. But we are here now, and it's the largest... democratic body aside from China's
democratic.
Sorry,
it's the second largest legislative chamber in the world.
Yeah,
which is cray. Like, we're not that big a country. There's only 60 million of us.
Yeah,
and only China is bigger with
1,000 or so. Isn't
it? Like about 1,000. We have 650. No,
that's
like 800 and something.
900
right?
or something. Yeah.
China has 1 billion people. And they've only got 1,000 representatives. Well, who are we kidding? It's a ridiculous system.
It is pretty strange.
We have had, like, conversations about the Lords in the past, and we're both kind of in a similar place where... Like, I think that an appointed chamber would actually be quite good. I don't see the point in the second elected chamber. Do you still have those views, or are we gonna... Come at me, boy.
There's an argument for, like, a regional assembly type thing. Like, similar to the US Senate, in the sense that the US Senate is made up of two senators from each state. And this, I think that would go some way to actually balancing the whole... the fact that Britain doesn't do regionalism or federalism very well. The difficulty with that, obviously, is we've devolved tons of powers to Scotland, some powers to Wales, a lot of powers to Northern Ireland, although that situation is complicated.
Yep, there's a reason that we haven't properly covered it before.
Yeah, we do occasionally try to, and then we realise we don't know anything about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Or even less than we know about regular politics, or regular British politics, I should say. That situation probably just isn't viable, so I guess the idea of like a house of experts, as it were, is maybe better. But the trouble with the current system is that it's filled up with like former politicians, and
the majority of them don't turn up, and we're paying for them, and that's like the frustrating thing. So we would actually quite like for Brexit to be disrupted, and for the like Conservative government to reform it, right? And by reform it, we mean to abolish it.
It depends how they reform it, I guess. I mean, as it stands, a lot of people say that the quality of the debate in the Lords is better because they're less under the thumb of the political parties
and
the way the Commons are. Yeah, and the whips, yeah. And there's probably something to be said for that, but, you know, as to how much actual scrutiny they put on each individual bill, I'm not really sure. There's definitely an argument for having an editorial chamber. I'm just not sure that the government really is in a position to actually restructure it in a useful way at this point. So it's too distracted by Brexit itself.
Do you think that it is, that the Lords is in its rights to be able to obstruct it as much as possible? Because the Conservatives still don't have a majority in the House of Lords.
So there's this thing known as the Salisbury Convention, which is that they...
I love it when you give me jargon. Tell me more.
So the Lords, in theory, shouldn't really block or amend any legislation that was in a Conservative manifesto. And obviously, in the Conservative manifesto of the 2015 general election, David Cameron did promise a referendum, and implied in that is that if you vote to leave, we will leave. The trouble is that Theresa May's government is...
new.
I mean, it's so different.
Land stanking new. It's so different. Smell the fresh leather.
It's so different from the...
in her trousers.
For the, shut up. It's so different from the Cameron government in the way that it thinks about the world, that it's pretty much an unelected government, I think you can fairly say. And therefore... and also, it's such a weird time in British politics anyway. Yeah. The Lords will probably feel that they can get away with things. And the Tories do not have a majority in the House of Lords, although they could get one just by appointing...
but just by appointing, like, 1,000 people who represent them. That's the crazy thing about the Lords, that you can do that, really.
I don't... Tony, the system is actually so dumb that the system it replaced was more sensible, and that was based on which vagina you came out of when you were born.
But then quite a lot of... the UK in terms of its politics and its social standing does still revolve around which vagina one's come out of. So there's been a lot of thumping of fists in the trigger in the this bill to trigger Article 50. Ken Clark was the only Conservative minister to vote against it
initially, but he was joined by is it Anna Soubry?
No, I don't think so. She still voted for it. But she's yeah, but she's still very angry about having to.
I think that there are more Tory rebels now. I can't remember how many there, but on the third reading there were, I think, a couple more people. I can't
perhaps
which
she
ones.
Did. I am in kind of in love with Anna Soubry. I want her to be my auntie.
Have you seen the interview that Owen Jones did with
her? No, I haven't yet. Is it very good?
You'll like it. I mean, I find her I find her kind of an insufferable Ramona, but you'll love it.
Yeah. That's really just what I want right now. I need to not feel like I'm the only person in the world who thinks this is really stupid.
I think there's about 48% of people in the UK who think it's really stupid.
Yeah, it's going to be brilliant. Yeah. But there seems to be quite a lot of consensus that this is what is going to happen. Are you surprised? Because a lot of people assumed that there'd be a lot of frustration in the House of Commons as they set up to trigger Article 50. But it actually looks like Theresa May is going to be able to do it by the end of March, which was her deadline before, right?
I'm not sure what I thought previously. I mean, I thought there'd be a lot of attempts to frustrate Brexit, and obviously there's been the lawsuits and...
But Corbyn just seems to be rolling over, right?
I think Corbyn...
Theresa May's tickling her.
Corbyn
tummy.
Probably voted for Brexit, let's be honest.
Let's be honest.
So it's no surprise that he... I mean, he just never was that in love with the EU in the first place. So even if he voted Remain for whatever reason, he probably wasn't that bothered by the outcome of the vote. He's, you know, massively failed to capitalise on the chaos that the government kind of is in. But, you know, he's incompetent, isn't he? So...
bless his cotton socks. So it ended up being approved by 494 votes to 122. That's
the SNP Lib Dems.
SNP Lib Dems.
Green MP.
The Green.
Yeah, the Green. handful of other people. Some
and
Labour,
like
right?
A load of Labour people who still can kind of like bring themselves to do it, like Diane Abbott, bless her cotton socks.
I mean, I obviously want it to be a hard Brexit or a clean Brexit, as Theresa May puts it, but I think there are...
not a red, white and blue Brexit. I just want to remind you what side you're on, Jimmy, every now and again.
Okay, fine, I am on that side. But I think that there are reasonable arguments to actually think that there should be more parliamentary scrutiny over this whole thing. And probably, if you're looking at it objectively, a soft Brexit is the thing that reflects the vote of the country the most, the most accurately. It's just that a soft Brexit combines, in many ways, the worst of both worlds. You have even less sovereignty, even less control over EU rules and, you know, the way the country is governed.
It's the opposite of that Hannah Montana song, where she had the best of both worlds, and we're in the flip of Hannah Montana's life.
Are you trying to make this relevant for 10 years ago?
Yes. Although, like, Hannah Montana was brilliant. That was Miley Cyrus. Shit. Look what happened to her. She's living in the dystopian future as well, as are we.
I don't know how you've managed to do this.
Is there anything else that you'd like to say about us leaving the European Union?
We've said quite a lot. And I think we've done our regular Brexit update that needs to be done every so often. And we can move on.
We'll try not to cover it every single week, listeners. But it is the biggest thing that's happening to our country right now.
To be fair, once the bill's gone through Parliament and the Article 50 is invoked, and negotiations start, there'll obviously still be news stories about it, but negotiations presumably will be largely closed off, and there'll be leaks occasionally, but it'll just kind of rattle on, and, you know... Like a death rattle, yeah. There's actually one kind of interesting point before we move on. There's a lawsuit going on in Ireland at the moment, which contests the point that once you've triggered Article 50, it's irrevocable.
Yeah.
Mark Elliott, this public affairs academic, I think at Cambridge or Oxford, possibly, he wrote a little bit about it. If the plaintiffs in that lawsuit win, it would mean that, in theory, the UK government could pause or stop Article 50 after they've invoked it, which would totally change the dynamic of any vote on, like, a Brexit deal in Parliament. So that lawsuit is super interesting just because of the implications. Jazza is crossing his fingers at the moment.
So that, and the fact that there's the possibility of British citizens being offered non-national citizenship of the European Union, are the two things that stop me from crying myself to sleep at night.
Does it bother you that much?
So much. Have you met me?
I mean, yeah, there are some benefits to be had through having EU citizenship, but they don't seem that big, do they?
How many times do I have to tell you that that me and the EU, it's emotional and it's visceral?
Yeah, but you can
There's very little logic in my attachment to it.
You can be European without a passport.
I like the stars in a circle. I think it's very pleasing to the eye. Anyway, shall we talk about Twitter?
Yeah, we probably should talk about Twitter.
So, shares in Twitter, I'm quoting the BBC here, shares in Twitter have fallen more than 10%. After the company have reported that they've lost $167 million in the last quarter of 2016. There were many people who assumed that there would be a bump in the relevancy of Twitter, which many berate as being like a bit of a dying social network, or a non-growing social network, which, to be honest, in the tech world are pretty much the same thing.
Yeah,
And many were hoping that there would be a bump with the election of Donald Trump because, well, I mean, that's how he communicates.
Communicate is bigly. Putting it a bit strongly, I think.
He types
words into it.
I mean, he is the president of the United States. You're a tech journalist.
I used to be. I'm not anymore.
Oh, you were a tech journalist.
Sorry. Yeah.
What is your understanding of why Twitter is a bit shit? And so you can be the journalist. And because I am the academic now, I can tell you what I think academically. I don't know why you're laughing. I'm a serious, clever person.
I mean, you are actually studying social media.
Yeah.
Its implications. Yeah, okay.
I'm excited to give you, like, terms.
To school me in social media. Okay, so the reason Twitter loses money like crazy is because no one has worked out how to make any money from Twitter, because they give away all of their value for free. And they've tried to do, like, some advertising stuff. There was that thing about Twitter Moments. I don't know if you remember that.
I still quite like Twitter Moments. Is it gone, though?
I haven't even seen them for weeks.
Yeah, the fact that I don't weeks, even years. Know if it's gone or not. It was a nice novelty. You used to get to scroll through and see what had happened.
I mean, the weird thing is, I think, in terms of public discourse, Twitter has impacted it way more than Facebook. And Facebook makes tons of money because, you know, it has a really good advertising model and everything else. But Twitter doesn't make any money. And I mean, if it keeps losing hundreds of millions of dollars, these aren't, you know, these are actual losses as well, quarterly losses. How will it survive in the long term? I just don't know.
Why do you think... So, I think that that is a major reason for Twitter being like in dire straits at the moment. That's why they've lost 10% off their floated share price. But the major problem with Twitter is that it isn't growing, I think.
In terms of its user base.
Yeah, because there are networks that still don't make money. There's a lot of speculation as to whether Instagram makes money for Facebook, who own it. Mm-hmm. Snapchat certainly doesn't make money. Weibo in China doesn't make money. But what they have is growing user bases. If Twitter were still able to get beyond that just above 300 million monthly user mark.
Those are active users.
Those are active users, users who log in at least once a month. Mm-hmm. If they would be able to keep that growing, then I think that there would be less of an issue. Because, I mean, it's crazy that 300 million people can't be seen as a viable market, but there you go.
It is kind of crazy.
Why do you think people aren't taking it on? It seems saturated.
Oh, God, that is a good question.
Oh, my God, was that a compliment?
I mean, I wouldn't get ahead of ourselves. I suppose the differences with Twitter is it's like a public-facing communication service, much more than Facebook. I mean, I know you can see Facebook posts mm-hmm. publicly, but Facebook is far more about interpersonal relationships and friendships and family and whatnot. And, like, Snapchat is more about sending, you know, videos of yourself to your friends and... I suppose
well done, you avoided using dick pics as an example.
Or dick pics, but you know, there are multiple avenues for sending dick pics. Yeah. I suppose Instagram is quite similar to Twitter in the public facing sense, but mm-hmm. you also said that isn't making any money or people don't think it is.
I mean, so Twitter ads, which look very similar and integrate really well into Facebook ads, have only been around for just over a year. And so people are still kind of trying to figure out whether or not Instagram itself is going to be a viable, like, money-making platform. But also it doesn't matter because it's part of Facebook.
Yeah.
And Facebook loves having a monopoly on visual storytelling on the internet. Because nobody's using Flickr anymore.
Well, Facebook is actually also looking into things like payment services and loads of other potential things that it can make money out of. And also it's the largest social network in the world. And because of this thing called the network effect that applies to social media massively, the more people that use it, the more valuable it is for any individual user to sign up to. I mean, maybe it's just that nothing that Twitter has tried has worked, but they will find something eventually. But, you know, it's just this massive success and failure story in Silicon Valley. If I knew why it wasn't making money, I'd probably be making a lot more money myself, running a tech startup. But I just think it is interesting because, as I said, in terms of political discourse, Twitter is massively more important than Facebook. And also,
Think about it. Why is that? That's because journalists bloody love it. Mm. The only reason that Twitter is vaguely relevant or paid any attention to is because it's a wonderful way for journalists to massage their egos, and they're the people that set the tone. And for want of, I wish I weren't flogging this word so much recently, but like, are the gatekeepers to what people talk about.
Yeah.
And people fucking love it.
I mean, there was a study that suggested, you know, the overwhelming majority of like tweets were actually down to journalists and public broadcasters. And I mean, the public figures are the ones that people pay attention to on Twitter. And I mean, from a personal point of view, it is my favourite social media network, but I am a journalist.
Why is it your favourite social media?
Because I think you...
Social medium, I should social probably medium. Actually say.
Yeah, we probably should say that. I guess because it allows... I'm going to have to use this phrase, content creators, to interact with their audience. Whereas Facebook, as I said, is like it's a friendship and family thing. Instagram is vapid. as is Snapchat. I'm actually just too old for Snapchat. Like, that was just after.
Yeah, it was really sad when I tried to download it. They were hiring about a year ago, and I was thinking about jumping ship and going to Snapchat. And downloaded it, tried it for about a week, and I was just like, I don't get this, and I cannot sell this product.
Well, it doesn't sound like it's
making
any money anyway.
They need someone 5 years younger than me.
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, I think that public-facing thing is interesting about Twitter. So that's why I like it, I guess.
And also you like enjoy trolling me every now and
again. It's very, very good for slagging other people off as well.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that Facebook isn't. You don't want to get into a political fight on Facebook because you'll just alienate everyone you know.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone will think you're a dick.
Mm-hmm.
Although apparently, you know, you think I'm a dick anyway, so...
I mean, you are, but I do love you to bits. Go on, ask me what I think. You never ask me what I think.
I ask you what you think all the time.
No,
this podcast is mostly you talking about what you think.
No, ask me.
Jazza, what do you think?
So, Twitter, I think, is really interesting because it marks a really specific point in how people used the internet, where the majority of stuff that was posted and shared was really public-facing, and it was for everybody. It was not in private networks. The problem with Twitter at the moment is that is twofold, I think. First of all... it's really difficult for them to control tone, and a lot of people have been hounded off of that platform, and that makes it scary for new adopters. Like parents are going to be a lot less likely, I think, to allow their kids to be using Twitter than they're going to be to allowing them to use something like Facebook or Instagram.
Do you think parents have a lot of control over what social media their kids use?
I don't know. I don't know anybody of that demographic.
I mean,
but also I think that it is a big turnoff because it's scary. If you're a 16-year-old girl, why would you want to start posting stuff on Twitter? And because of the text-based... I know it's multimedia now, but because of the text-based nature of Twitter, the majority of it is going to be opinions or commentary or jokes of some kind. And all of those are places where women do end up getting an awful lot of abuse compared to men. And so it's like they haven't managed to keep...
I think there were studies last year that kind of refuted that to a significant degree. And a lot of the abuse that women get is from other women as well. So I think...
Doesn't make it okay.
It doesn't make it okay, but you're trying to make it out as a sexist thing, and it isn't necessarily.
I didn't say that it was a sexist thing. I said, like, it is a lot harder to be a guy with a... It's a lot harder to be a woman with opinions on the internet than it is to be a guy.
I don't... necessarily think that's true.
How about the Guardian study that showed that the number of hate comments on each of their journalists pages, it was women and people of colour that got by far the largest number of abuse?
I mean, did they control for like what the people were writing about? I don't know. I mean, I've seen other studies that refute the idea that it's women that attract majority of abuse on the internet.
I'm sure Jimmy will be very nice and he'll link those in the description
If I can find them.
Oh, that'll be a shame if you can't, won't it? the second thing that I think means that Twitter has kind of reached complete saturation now is because especially young people use the internet very differently. I think that the somewhat hostile and serious nature of Twitter stops older people from adopting the network as a way of being able to be social and an ability to like broadcast themselves. That doesn't really exist for Facebook because Facebook is so prolific and they have been able to increase the number of people that are using that network by expanding into new markets across the world, including India and Africa, and by increasing the number of older people who are on the platform.
The average age on Facebook has gone up over the years massively, hasn't it?
Average age is about 10 years older on Facebook than it is on Twitter, interestingly. However, Twitter's...
Sorry, what are the average ages?
It's about 45, I think, on Facebook. It's about 35 on Twitter.
That sounds about right.
And I think it goes down another 10 years or even more. I think if you like do a medium or something for Snapchat, they like it goes down like another 10 years in terms of the average age of the users, and that is where Twitter has failed, because young people don't use the internet so much anymore as a way of just shouting out into the world. They use, they are more likely to use something like, which is called, this is an academic term, scalable sociality, where you have, you can completely control the audience and the network that you are broadcasting to, whether that's in a who you share your snaps to, or people who are in your WhatsApp group, or people who are in a private messaging forum.
I mean, I think that's probably the most significant reason why Facebook...
Thank you, it's why I left it till last.
It does kind of link into what I said initially, though, in that Twitter is far more public-facing, I think, than Facebook and Snapchat and so on. Not so much Instagram, but the idea that you're... I think for like a lot of teenagers, they don't necessarily have a good reason to actually broadcast themselves to the world.
Mm-hmm. I think that abuse is one of the reasons.
I think it probably
but
is.
But I think that there are plenty of other reasons as well.
Well, just as a kid, you're far more likely to want to message your friends, be it via text or video or images or whatever, than you are to just message random people.
Yeah, and you want a space where mum and dad can't see you, which is why Facebook currently have a problem of low adoption amongst young people. That changes hugely when they actually go to university, because everything still at university is organised through Facebook groups and Facebook events and all of that kind of stuff. But they want, teenagers and kids are always going to want a place away from where their parents can see them, so that they can experiment with being themselves and finding themselves.
And misbehaving too.
And misbehaving. And like, it's either the bike shed, or it's, it used to be Twitter because nobody was on Twitter, and now it's Snapchat. And probably still the bike sheds.
It's also worth saying about Twitter that it's run by this guy, Jack Dorsey, who also runs a payments company called Square.
Mm-hmm.
And he devotes, I mean, he works all the hours God gives, but he devotes half his time to each company, which can't be good in terms of making Twitter more money.
Mm, interesting.
So there's management reasons as well why Twitter's failing.
Is Square profitable?
I have no idea. It's a relative...
It's not.
It's a younger company.
It isn't. They have about a $6 billion valuation, but they have yet to make money.
There's probably a lot. I think there's a lot more headroom, actually.
I'm sure he's doing fine, though.
Yeah, I'm sure he's doing fine. I think that there's a lot more headroom in terms of expansion opportunities and payments than there is in social media, because Facebook is so dominant. And you've obviously got the Chinese social networks that we've only
Weibo is the big one, which is kind of like a hybrid of Twitter and Facebook. Renren, does anybody use Renren anymore? I don't know. I've not logged into the Chinese web for about 5 years. But it, like, China is just a completely separate ecosystem.
That's deliberate on the part of the Chinese authorities.
Because YouTube, Facebook and Twitter and quite a lot of Google are blocked behind the Great Firewall of China, which is a little bit of a misnomer, but you get the gist.
Mm. Shall we move on?
Do you want to ask me about gay things?
So, Jazza, gay things.
Well, you explain it. You're the one that needs schooling.
Oh.
And I'll...
like in the previous topic.
Yeah.
So, as we said earlier, there was a policeman on Twitter who retweeted this poster that you said was from the University of East Anglia.
Correct, yeah.
That denoted terminology for LGBTQ plus people, as Jazza.
They actually call it LGBT plus. Generally, just so you know, LGBT is fine. LGBTQ plus is fine. LGBTQIAA plus is fine. As long as you're trying to be inclusive if possible and you understand that certain people identify in certain ways, then it's fine.
I think you guys need a better word for the LGBTQ acronyms.
So you know that queer has been, like, reappropriated. And queer generally, in, like, the political way, means somebody who is not cisgender or straight.
Yes.
You know what cisgender is?
Yes, I do.
Is
do you want to explain to the listeners?
So cisgender is you identify as the gender which was... given to you at birth based on your genitalia, basically.
Yes.
So for me, the doctor saw Willie, went, that's a boy, and I am lucky enough that that's true.
Mm-hmm. But actually, the word queer is on the banned list of that poster, isn't it? Have you got it in front of you?
Yeah, do you want to see it?
Yeah.
And you can, like, rage about it, because you hate being told what you can say and not say, don't you?
I'm generally against it. So we should probably read this out for the listeners, but I will try and remember to link it. So, okay to say, LGBT plus, gay person, lesbian, gay man, bisexual, transgender person, transgender woman, presumably transgender man is all right as well, non-binary person, intersex person, asexuality. Not okay to say, queer, ahomosexual, dyke or lesbo, puff or fag, confused or greedy, that relates to bisexual on the chart. Mm-hmm. Transsexual or tranny, atransgender, shemale, genderbender, that relates to non-binary person. Hermaphrodite, intersex person, as in it relates to intersex person. And abstinence, which relates to asexuality.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you seem to know, like, what most of those mean, right?
It's hanging around with you for so long.
Yeah, yeah. I will say that I don't think that this is a particularly, accurate
list. Homosexual's a weird one, right?
So, I was trying to explain this to you before. The issue that I and quite a lot of people have is when the adjective to describe us end up becoming the nouns, because right. Then it's... I feel that it's quite dehumanising. So here it says that it's not okay to say that somebody is a homosexual. I feel like that is, like, super, super outdated. And also, sorry, mate, I'm a person and I happen to be a gay one.
I don't think
so. Do you know what I mean?
If I said Jazza is a homosexual, even though that would sound weird because it does sound old-fashioned.
Yeah, doesn't it sound weird?
But there's a load of stuff that sounds old-fashioned that isn't necessarily offensive. And it wouldn't.
No, but it's the idea that I am a homosexual or a gay first, and whatever else second. That is the most important thing about me. That's why I think that is there, as well as it being a really outdated term.
So I think this sort of gets to the heart of our disagreement over this. I think is that a lot of this is contextual, as in it would depend. It would depend on
which is
the,
why I don't think the situation. It's fantastic.
That you're using it in.
So, as you were saying, for example, queer was in the not okay to say thing, but I think that that's specifically talking about the way that often older people will have experienced the word queer. Mm. It is now a reclaimed and political term that is used to describe members of and the community at large of, like, non-cisgender, non-straight people. Mm. But if, like, a builder sees me mincing down the road and he calls me a queer, he's not saying, yes, good for you, you liberal, is he?
No, that's true, but that's, again, about context, isn't it?
No, correct.
This is why I think it's just weird to have lists like this, and also, it would be very possible for me to insult you using, you know, if I change the tone of voice, using any of the words on the okay to say list.
I mean, sure, but it's not assuming that you're trying to manipulate language. I think this is really useful, actually, because I understand that LGBTQ+, etc., etc., terms can be really confusing and quite daunting for people that don't understand them and aren't around them. And so I think that giving people a cheat sheet, I think it's actually really appropriate that you call it a cheat sheet.
But some of these are just wrong. I mean, and some of these are weird in the sense that I don't know anyone who would ever say a transgender. They would say a transgender person.
No, but exactly, because there are some people who will say that transgender there.
Have you heard that?
Yeah, I've heard people
really?
Use
okay.
it like that. And it doesn't necessarily come from a place of hate or a place of abuse, but it comes from a place of ignorance that kind of takes away somebody's humanity to a certain extent.
But there's also so much disagreement, even within the queer community or among queer people, as to which of these terms are offensive or not. And it also depends on the country. And I mean, for instance, I mean, this doesn't relate to queer language, as it were, but the term coloured is really offensive in Britain, is okay, is used to describe, like, mixed race people in South Africa, I believe.
Yeah.
Trevor Noah uses it in mm-hmm. in a documentary that I've seen him in. I can't remember what the status is in Australia, but it totally depends on, you know, where it is. So mm-hmm. having a cheat sheet is actually quite unhelpful. If you didn't know anything about this subject, you'd read the cheat sheet and you'd be like, okay, well, these are the rules, but they're not actually the rules.
Yeah, but that's why it's like a cheat sheet. It's not necessarily going to knock all of the balls out of the park, but I think it's going to give people a pretty okay idea. And if you are to keep to the terms that they say are okay, like that LGBT person, that gay person, that lesbian person, then you're probably going to be fine and not going to step on anybody's toes. And especially at a Pride event that is meant to be, and I know you hate this word, a safe space for people, where you can bare all of your flesh, be covered in glitter and make out with everybody. At least that's what I do during Pride. I don't do that during Pride.
I mean, that's just Friday night for you, isn't it? Most of the time.
It's really not. I'd rather just play Overwatch.
I'm not sure you've like really refuted the central point, though, that...
What is your central point?
My central,
because I feel like I have.
Well, I guess we just disagree. But do you remember that whole shebang over Benedict Cumberbatch used? I think he used the word coloured.
Yes,
he was talking about the fact that there are not that most prominent British actors are white. That there weren't enough opportunities for non-whites in British acting, and so they were all moving over to the US. And he used the word coloured, and some people did. It is generally taken to be an offensive term in Britain, but he obviously didn't mean it in an offensive way, and that's why I don't. There are no hard and fast rules. Like try and I think in a way, if you are part of one of these minority groups, you just have to interpret whether somebody means something malicious by it, and obviously there are some ambiguous situations in that. But
so that's kind of like the just deal with it thing. But I think that
I'm not even saying just do it. I'm saying do not get offended when no offence was meant.
It's really difficult sometimes when somebody's accident can make you feel shit. If somebody like misgenders somebody, that can make someone feel really shit. And especially like this is for. Celebration of like queer culture and LGBT for LGBT Pride Month. Those are the places where this stuff shouldn't happen at all. Misgendering people shouldn't happen at all. The use of incorrect terms shouldn't happen at all, because this is meant to be a place where we can do whatever we want and where we can for once not feel that like drop in the pit of our stomach with somebody uses the wrong word. And I think this tries as much as it can to maintain that space where people can be super queer and happy as much as possible.
But the idea of being offended in a social situation because somebody has inadvertently done something to offend you, it's not unique to queer people. And if somebody says something to me that's like, oh, that was upsetting, but I know they didn't mean anything by it, I would get over it.
No,
you know,
so
I'd be like, well, they didn't mean anything by it, so I'm, and maybe, you know, obviously you can instinctively be upset about something, but the mature thing is to say, well, that wasn't really, it was just an accident.
Yeah, but sure, Jimmy, but people like kill themselves because they're like LGBT, and like transgender people kill themselves more than any other demographic in like the UK, and sometimes the stuff that is, for want of a better word, triggered by people using incorrect terms, can be really, really fucking shit. And we've been lucky enough in our lives, I think, in general. I hope I'm not touching on anything sensitive, Jimmy.
He's touching my leg, but I'm sure it's fine.
But we're lucky enough that we're big boys and we can deal with people using wrong words around us. And I generally don't bemoan people saying the wrong stuff out of ignorance, and I actually jump at the chance to be able to educate them. But not everyone is in the same position to be able to do that and to be able to brush stuff off as we are.
I appreciate that. This whole argument seems a bit silly to me.
So I know that you get really annoyed whenever you get told stuff that you can and cannot say. Why is that?
I don't know.
God, I feel like it's a therapy session.
It does
now.
Feel like a therapy session. Excuse me. In this case, I think the cheat sheet that we are looking at and any combination of rules you could come up with would just be wrong. I think that, if you're offended by something where somebody didn't mean offence, I don't really feel that's on the person that spoke. It's on you, really. Sorry about that. I mean, that, you know, to some degree,
thank you for apologizing.
In public life, you do have to actually take responsibility for your own emotions, right?
Sure, but don't come into my house and use things wrong and expect me to be the one who apologizes to you. Because that's what this particular sheet is for. This is meant to make sure that the majority straight police officers are going to be able to do their job properly, and they're not going to be able to do their job properly if they are triggering people left, right and centre.
I don't think this is intended purely for the, you know, the Pride event. I think this is intended for wider circulation. Sorry, he's just showing me the... yeah, I mean, it is linked to Pride. I'm not saying it isn't. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying it's been circulated onto it. And even if it... Okay, we don't have to look at this list. There are other lists available, mm-hmm. which are intended for wider use.
I mean, but also, this is completely different if it's me in a gay club and I'm calling my mates a fag. Like, I wouldn't actually do that. But lots of gay men use the word fag as a form of... as a word of endearment.
That's why... That's why these posters are dumb.
No, but it's obviously different for people who are guests in a queer space.
Okay.
And I think this tries as much as possible to make sure that those guests can get on with their jobs and be as included as possible. Because it's our thing, it's our event, it's our space. And, like, just do your best to...
I think you're being a little bit tenuous with this argument, fixating on the Pride event. I mean, in relation to your previous question about why I get upset about language police, and this is actually literally a case of language police, because it's a policeman who retweeted the poster.
Wait, hey.
I mean, the whole point of controlling language is to control thought. That's the ultimate aim behind it. And in mm-hmm. the case of having to...
I would love for people to be less homophobic.
Yeah, I think...
noble goal, I believe.
I think people should be less homophobic. But if people are not being homophobic, they're just using a word differently from what the listener...
Mm.
From the manner in which the listener uses that word, then there's no problem there. Really.
Cool, sure. So if you guys disagree with Jimmy, there's only so much I can do, listener. Then where can they find you on Twitter, that dying social network?
I feel that you just actually haven't provided a good argument as to... I mean, I think I've refuted every one of your points.
I think my argument's really good, and I think that I've refuted every one of your points. I mean, shall we call it a tie for now?
No, I mean, you're entitled to your opinion, but it mm-hmm. is wrong.
Sure.
I think...
Cool. I'm getting flashbacks to when I... So, last week, I did a talk at the University of Durham Student Union.
Is that going on YouTube at some point?
No, I don't think so.
What was the talk on?
Old media is dying. And as I was for the proposition.
As in paper media or TV or...
So, apparently, I was meant to define the terms...
Did you do that?
Nope. I've never done a debate before in my life. I had no idea what I was doing.
Have you not?
But we lost like 19 votes to 90. Like quite badly.
So you got trounced.
Yeah,
did they do a vote before the debate?
No.
Oh, that it's usually when like in debates they do a vote as you go in and then a vote as you leave and you can see the swing. So you might still lose, but you've more people on your side, so in a way you've won.
Oh.
You see what I mean? But they obviously didn't do that in Durham.
Yeah, no, yeah. It was very...
Britain's fifth university.
We've completely, like, destroyed the flow of the podcast and are just having a chat again. Durham is fascinating, and I hope that listeners who went to Durham University won't be offended by this. But Durham is full of Oxford and Cambridge...
Rejects.
I was going to say rejects, but then decided to say people who didn't get into Oxford and Cambridge.
People who applied for Oxford or Cambridge and mm-hmm. did not get in.
And in my defence, this was explained to me by quite a few students that we ended up going out for. Oh yes, I tried to get into Wadham, but I didn't get in, so I'm here now. I think that Durham students are like a little bit angry and bitter.
Chip on their shoulder.
Oxford and Cambridge students tend to be like really apologetic and sorry about everything because they feel guilty about getting into Oxford and Cambridge.
Yeah.
But I think that's why Durham is perceived as being a more right-wing university. Because everybody's a bit angry.
Bitter.
Anyway, so I've managed to insult...
I'd say left-wingers are more stereotypically angry than right-wingers. So I'm sure in reality it's about even, but, you know, wherever it's a protest, like, marching down towards Westminster, people shouting, swearing at the Tories, it's always
the Andrea Leadsom supporters, they put on a bit of a show, didn't they?
It was one of the shittest marches in history.
It was really quite adorable, though, wasn't it? They tried. where can they find you on Twitter if they disagree with you on LGBT stuff? At JDE Nichols? Yeah, sure.
Yes,
cool.
Excellent. That's it.
Yeah. If you'd like to talk to me, then I'm at Jazza John. You can also find me on the internet at youtube.com/rhymewithoranges.
Nearly said Right Dishonourable.
I did, yeah. But you can find us at Right Dishonour on Twitter as well.
You can. Yes.
Sure. Rate us on iTunes and do other things to make share this. Love us, please validate us with your engagement.
Yeah, we should over the next few weeks have more guests. It's mostly been us. You're probably bored of the sound of our voices, in which case you are listening to the wrong podcast.
Yeah, because the one thing that we can promise is more of our voices.
Yeah.
Alright, okay, bye then. Say
bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Yeah, bye. Yeah, whatever.